Of course, when it comes to striking shapes and wearing pointy brassieres and other fashion accessories, clearly the button to press is...
Journalist, TV producer, novelist and 21st century Newcastle man. It's Ian Lennox.
I know you love it all, Ian, don't you? You're getting in touch with your inner self. It's the way forward. Yep.
There's many 6 foot two, you don't need high heels.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's very true, and high heels have been commented on several times, including whilst we were covering various...
And you've got size 12 feet as well.
Just like to thank our official tweeter once again, in case you're wondering, the Siren FM tweet, breakfast 8 through 10, which is actually 8 a.m, so that's okay. Agriculture and food and much more. Very good. Well, we've been talking about the Great Show. We will have a wonderful excerpt from the coverage we provided on day one of the Great Yorkshire Show, where we actually go through the food halls with Dylan Rice and Sue Rice and Bridget Rice, and it's truly wonderful in all sorts of ways, and it's really one of the reasons I haven't got any further in terms of reading your latest online epic, Ian. Just cutting to the quick there, not messing about, none of this kind of coyness or saying, you know, it's looking wonderful. I haven't really, but it's there, it's sitting on my laptop just waiting to actually sort of be digitally sort of delved into.
Right, well, that's very reassuring.
Look, the money has been paid. I purchased it. What more do you want? Goodness sakes.
That is the most important thing.
Expect me to read it as well.
Yes. You know,
inevitably, the complimentary copies I've read instantly as a matter of course, as duty. But when I purchase it, you think, whoa, just let it hang, you know, save it for a moment. In the studio, we have Eva MacDonald, who has been busily working with us this week. And indeed, is a midweek drive out now, officially sort of sanctioned. She's had her location reports. We were up in a helicopter last Thursday.
Yes,
yeah,
that's
one of the reasons we weren't there. You can see this by going to the Facebook page, Southside Broadcasting, seeing the Great York Maze from on high.
Yes.
At the top of a wheel yesterday, big wheel at the
Yorkshire
Harrogate Showground.
Well. Yeah. Yes.
I presume by this point you'd left the helicopter.
Well, it's sort of ummed and ahhed.
They've only got one propeller, you know.
You know, there's that, and of course, and I've head-butted a press sign, so it's all good. You know,
I thought you were going to say press agent.
Oh, show me the way. Yes, still. Yes. No, only kidding. We would never advocate it, head-butting at this time of the day on the morning.
What's the difference between butting and head-butting?
What is the difference between butting
one
and
word.
Nice. Right. It's 14 minutes to 9 o'clock on Siren 107.3 FM. It's the breakfast slot. Technically, it's the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, actually. That's the official title of the programme. So let's go with it. We did introduce yesterday, because Ed Wellman, the vanishing one, occasionally comes up with a range of sort of ideas, and he said he wants a drive time disc. I thought, surely that's a slipped one. But no, he specifically said he wants the drive time disc. So we did play it, and let's be honest, I think, you know, I was thinking again about this, Eva, this morning when I was doing some editing of the whole piece. I think we were harsh.
I think we were.
But
maybe.
Fair. But it was
maybe.
Harsh. We're not going to play it for you, Ian, because, you know, it's... but we do know, of course, that we do obviously provide a reprise of the country music tune that is usually provided by Cameron Tilbury. So you see,
yes.
Yeah, I think, you know, two things from that point of view. And I know you might have missed it last week, but that's okay. You could always listen again. It was a Tia Goans
concert. I did, because it never rang last week. I was sitting by the phone.
Oh, no!
I felt like a left-out schoolboy.
You felt like one of Jean-Paul Gaultier's lost sort of scenarios. I'm sure we must have let you know that things were happening there. Anyway, we do have last night's tune all set and ready to actually go, and it's a little number called Lace and Diamonds by Melissa Ramsky. Okay, so there we are. Melissa Ramsky, about to perform, for your benefit, edification and delight, and of course our dear listener, Lace and Diamonds, the official Cameron Tilbury July 15th choice for the world. Would you like to have a listen into this one?
Of course.
Thank you.
just officially liked Melissa Ramsky on Facebook. There we are, Melissa Ramsky, musician and band. And if you go to Facebook again, you can type in Melissa Ramsky and you won't have any of those parts. You can go straight to that and you might like it as well. Then again, you may not. What did you make of Lace and Diamonds from Melissa Ramsky?
Well, my critical faculties were hindered a little bit by trying to suppress a sneeze.
Oh, no.
But, yes, I thought I liked it. It was quite a strange
sound. You could have sneezed. We didn't have your microphone channel open, you know.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
We don't, you know, just when we actually have a musical break in, I normally close right. all the microphone channels. So right. you feel at ease to have any kind of...
I know, Alex. We were going to ring last week and you didn't.
Yeah, but you still weren't on air. You could have sneezed. Hopefully
actually,
you weren't sneezing.
I quite liked it. Mm-hmm. And I liked... she was very much in control of the song, which I liked, and she had a restrained style. Mm-hmm. And it's the sort of thing, I think if you listen to it, you think, well, I'd like to hear some other stuff she's sung, because she might extend her a little bit more.
On the Facebook page, Cameron Tilbury or Melissa Ramsky sort of writing from this point of view that hot new music from Melissa Ramsky, who was interviewed by indeed Cameron Tilbury, our very own Cameron, at the CMA Music Festival this year for Young Country. Oh, there we are.
So, she's young, is she?
Well, I mean, obviously.
I mean, everyone's young compared to me, Alex.
We don't deal with
age. I thought
age.
I'd better say that before you said it.
It's an illusion. No, well, why would I? You know? You'd say it's becoming as much of a cliche, me ribbing a certain black and white... I don't know personally how Raheem Sterling is going to cope on 150 grand a week, personally, but that's a by the by. You know, hopefully he'll get by. Different side, but it's before you say it, Ian. Over to Eva, would you like to describe Melissa for Ian's benefit? And indeed the listener, if they're not accessing Facebook, or indeed melissaramsky.com.
Well, the music, country style.
Yeah.
Country music.
Yeah. And the person herself?
Yes, solo artist.
Yes. Blonde solo artist. Prone to wearing little black dresses, reclining on a lounger. Okay. Say no more.
There we go.
Right, imagine half the nation's Facebook conversation.
Well, there you are, exactly. And if they're not, they must be listening to a different channel.
But only after 9 o'clock.
Well, there you are. It's all there, or indeed coming up to 1 a.m. in Los Angeles. So are you enjoying the weather, Ian, before you head off to Canada to actually sort of get down to more sort of
wonderful stuff out there? Yes, I had a lovely day yesterday. We went up the coast to, most people, your listeners will not know much about Newfoundland, but I went up the coast to a place called Seahouser, which overlooks Bamburgh Castle, which is a very famous castle site, and in fact was the subject or one of the base of the hero in one of the Bernard Cornwell series set in the days of King Alfred. And
I believe was used as an outdoor location for some of the shots of Blake 7 back in the 1970s.
It's been used outdoor shots for a lot of places, most historical books, most historical films, you just have people gathering up the shore at some stage. You can't get moving them on Sundays, Alex. It's thundering of horse hooves. You're trying to eat egg and butter sandwich.
Never mind, as long as things work, that's the important
thing. It'd be very interesting, actually, to compile an anthology of films that have been made on the Northumberland coastline.
Sounds like a book that's just waiting to be written.
Not by me, no. What? I'm not a. I'm not sort of right out of that. I'm sure that I bet you are. There are film critics and people like that who do know a lot about this sort of stuff. Though, I mean, I remember Roman Polanski filming up in the 60s at Cul-de-Sac.
Well, there we are. Dance of the Fearless Vampire Killers, one of the classics of our time. Before we even go into Tess of the D'Urbervilles and other sort of scenarios that we work for, John Wenham sitting doing his diary, even whatever the weather, he always is producing fantastic stuff. But isn't it great that Yorkshire once again is leading the way when it comes to showing England how to actually win things and beat the Australians?
Yes, it's amazing actually that they look like they're going to win the league title as well, as a divide of about four or five players. Because of the England duties.
Had a bit of an issue with the T20, I'm afraid, as far as sort of winning the whole sequence, but at the same time, as you rightly said, Yorkshire is rising. You know, sorry, Lincolnshire.
Well, they've killed one of the best batsmen, I think, one of the best batsmen England have ever had. Joe Root, I think he's...
Well, there we are. Even Jeff Boycott, I think, is acknowledging the fact that...
Has he?
Maybe it's due to the fact that perhaps Australian people are just getting too chronologically gifted. They're getting past it. That's a key thing.
Now, Biff Boycott knows more about batting than almost anybody
else. Do you think they're going to come out for the second test really full of fury, full of bush kangaroo, Crocodile Dundee fury? Or
right.
will it be a case of, no, we will now go on to actually have a wonderful whitewash, perhaps?
I don't know. It's a laugh of the gods, isn't it? But there certainly are things against them. They've lost one of their best bowlers. Watson, I think it is, who's out of form. He looks like he's
batting a score.
And of course,
we do have an Australian in charge of the England cricket team.
Ah, yes, that's another advantage. Because
subtly done.
Do you realise he coached New South Wales?
Yeah.
I think six or seven of the Australian team come from that county, or that estate. So he knows them backwards.
Well, there we are, you see. You know, and if you're playing cricket backwards, it could be a serious injury time. You know.
Well, it's terrific if they're fast bowling backwards, yes.
Exactly. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us today on the programme, Ian Lennox?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Are you back with us again next week?
I do hope so, before my travels, yes.
Everyone's changing, I stay the same.
With the classic words, would you like a fresh Yorkshire tomato, we move into our next particular piece. Dylan, you've already jumped into the taste test with this thing, so I take it a thumbs up already.
I'm never one for being backward and coming forward with such matters, you know. That is really tasty. Really. But so often you buy a commercial tomato, something from a supermarket, and you think, there's no flavour. Mm. It's completely different.
And see, you've had the cheese. Does the tomato do it justice as well?
Oh, yes, definitely. There's just such a difference between the heritage varieties. I mean, there's all sorts of different colours and shapes and sizes on the stand here.
And the gentleman behind it is indeed...
Nigel Bardell. I'm from the Tomato Growers Association. We've a whole range of tomatoes. There are only 34 growers in the UK, and more of them are in Yorkshire than anywhere else. So we've got a great range of Yorkshire produce here.
And what you've been hearing there from both Dylan and Sue, presumably that's something you'll hear quite a lot over the next 3 days at the Great Yorkshire Show, just how tasty they actually are.
The number of people that come and go, wow, a tomato that tastes like it used to. The biggest comment we then make to people is, well, what's really important is when you get home, fridges do flavours no favours. We keep our tomatoes warm in greenhouses. Please do the same at home. Don't put them in the fridge. That's what kills the flavour.
Fridges do flavours, no favours.
You see, I didn't know that, and that will change my behaviour with my tomatoes. Yorkshire, though, why Yorkshire growing so many tomatoes? I would have thought it'd have been the sort of Kent and down on the south coast, really. I suppose we associate it with sun, don't we?
That's a Lincolnshire question.
There's plenty of sun in Yorkshire. I mean, East Yorkshire, a lot of these tomatoes come from East Yorkshire, though some of the ones we've got here are from North Yorkshire as well. But it comes down to light levels. When you get quite coastal, so around East Yorkshire, when you get towards Hull, there's a great history and heritage of market gardening in that area. So there's a lot of tomato growers, which is why, yeah, we say there are more tomato growers within 50 miles of York than any other city in the UK.
If I was to try... What we've got, we've probably got half a dozen different varieties, maybe a couple more than that. Do they all have their own characteristics, different flavours?
They're all slightly different, yes. So the smaller they are, the sweeter they are. The larger they are, the sharper they are. The plum types will be fleshier. The round cherry types will be juicier. The yellows are quite different. Tomatoes originally were yellow when the Spanish first brought them to the UK from South America. They were yellow. And lots of people say, have you done something odd to these tomatoes? And we go, no, it's just really old variety. The same, some of the crimsons and blacks are incredible. Sometimes the crimson ones have a bit of a tough skin, but they're great grill, roast, barbecue. The colours are just incredible on them.
I've learnt something about keeping them slightly warmer rather than in the fridge. Is there anything about keeping them on the vine?
So part of what gives you that lovely aroma, when people go, wow, they smell like they come from a greenhouse, the fruit itself actually has no aroma, has very little smell to it. The aroma all comes from the green parts of the plant. Now, you shouldn't actually eat the green parts of the plant. You often see chefs now dropping whole vines into things. Don't do that, but that's what gives you that smell. So the one bit, if nothing else, when we eat, we also go with smell. So when you pick a vine up, you get that lovely, straight from the greenhouse smell.
And that's what we get in here, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we'll just sort of say, look for the grower's name, C. Dunford, on the punnet. And, of course, you can buy these things in tomato. These tomatoes. A little bit of shameless plug for you there.
These are out and about all through Yorkshire, and the key bit we say is look out for obviously Yorkshire tomatoes, but British tomatoes. 80% of what you buy sadly is imported, but 20% is homegrown. There are tomato growers out there. You're the customers, you're the consumers, you're in charge. Look for them, ask for them.
We continue here. We're delighted to actually speak to the fabulous Sam Davis from Garden Hideouts. Sue, you were particularly interested in one of the Garden Hideouts that's on display.
If it's entirely possible, I do believe I have fallen in love with a shed. It's gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful.
No, thank you.
Talk us through what you've got here, because it does seem as though you've literally managed to take some traditional designs and literally, I won't say pimp my garden house.
It is.
That's not too far off what we have done. We've taken the very traditional designs of the Shepherd's Hut. We've had them interior designed by Bayswater Interiors, who have gone to town on it, basically. They've done a fantastic job in fitting it out. Utilising small spaces is the biggest key with a contemporary feel to it.
Can we just have a little wander into one of them, basically? We're in your hands, so we'll walk and talk, proving we can actually sometimes do a little multitasking thing. And I think we're heading to the one that I think, Sue, you're particularly interested in, which is the Chatsworth Shepherd Hut. So if we make our way up here, okay, let me talk about that. And shall we? Should we conduct the interview whilst we're seated down? What do you think? Tuck in from that side of things. So we'll get a little flavour in terms of what's happening on here. So on this side, etc. Resting one's bones, etc. Sue, does this sort of float your boat?
I absolutely love this. It's adorable. The sofas have got lovely little yellow, mustard yellow buttons. There's a lovely bookcase envy. There is a fantastic bookcase at the back. You've got a little sink that's beautifully fitted out. A little shower and vanity unit. I couldn't ask for anything more in a shed.
We're just bringing it. I mean, Dylan, would this suit your good self as a shed?
There is one big problem. I have so far not found a bar.
No, there is a fridge in there which I'm sure we could stock quite nicely for you, sir. Especially if you bought one, of course. We'd fill it lovely with a few beers for you.
But seriously, it's a sort of a beautiful thing. You could use one of these for a whole range of different things.
Yeah.
You could have it as a study, a spare bedroom for guests, or anything like that.
That's one of the sort of USPs for us is we can get around planning regulation laws as well, because it's on wheels. So it's a cheaper option than an extension on a house. You can use it as a play area for your kids. You could have it as a bedroom, an office, your own personal space. It literally, the options are endless. You can do what you want with them. We fit to design as well. So if you came into the office, it's a 4 to 5 week build, and we can fit any way you wanted. You wanted it 1 meter longer, 2 foot wider. You wanted extra things in, another bedroom, another bathroom. We can do it all, fortunately.
What about the heating, though? I was concerned about heating, these things. It's going to be really cold.
Yeah, no, it's LPG heating, so it comes from gas. There's heaters underneath the benches that we sat at now, which then would turn into a heated bed for you. There's a heated towel rail in the bathroom, which gives added heating anyway to the whole hut. And then it's rock wall insulated, floor, ceiling, walls, the lot, which is good for acoustics and for heat. It keeps the cold out and the warm in.
And you build these yourself?
The company that I work for do, we build them down in Wrexham, so they're all CNC cut, so it's sort of state-of-the-art technology to build them, which gives them sort of rigidity and long-lasting, yes.
So is it the sort of thing that you'd say that Skegness is longing for?
It is utterly the cat's whiskers. This is just, yes, this is absolutely, this is class in a shed. The only thing that's missing is a lovely bottle of fizz.
So, again, looking at, obviously, we were in the Chatsworth Shepherd Hut from that point of view. I mean, they do seem to be competitively priced. I mean, it's 24K, 25K, so reasonable when you think of what's actually included.
Yeah, definitely. We had a look at the market around us and thought there's no point in us pushing out of the boundaries of what people are going to be prepared to pay. So what we tried to do was keep it affordable as such. We looked at... The market around us, basically, not just Shepherd's Hut. We looked at sort of outside living, added space, extensions, looking at builders, what they would charge for something not too dissimilar. And we feel like we've hit the nail on the head, really. The price is definitely competitive with everybody else, and it's fully fitted.
And have you been at the Great Yorkshire Show before?
We haven't, no. This is our first year.
I thought I hadn't, because we, in this particular area, we've certainly seen a lot of outdoor African furniture types, which are all very nice, but this is the first time, I have to say, you've moved into the Rolls Royce of outdoor living spaces, which is very impressive.
Yeah, it is really, in terms of the the spec on this, it oozes class from the moment you walk past
Thank
the corner and see it.
In fact, it's a wonderful outside broadcast space. We should really commandeer it.
It's a nice studio space indeed, Alex. Quite
there
right.
We'll submit
our critique.
Exactly so. A web address for people who wish to find out more about garden living spaces. Presumably it is gardenhideouts.co.uk.
It is indeed. That's where you can find us. Any inquiries, you'd be speaking to me. So, yeah, get in touch.
You know, sometimes the amazing things that work through in the Discovery Zone, quite astounding. We're speaking now to, I believe, the Captain Burwash the Pirate. Is that
you knew me without introduction, Master.
The Captain Burwash, though.
Well, yes, when you scared Bridget off with all the
pistols. That lass has just fled.
I'm not sure whether that was the idea, Captain, that actually little Bridget, who is in, I think she's coming out now, she might sort of be able to...
She's herself installed with all the lovely activities that are in there.
Okay. Come inside for storytelling with Captain Burwash. Is this your role, to actually scare children inside?
Nay, I must admit, if a pirate can't scare a little maid, then I know not what. As long as it ain't the other way round. Right. I shall be telling them all about pirates today, showing them all sorts of things.
Sue.
Where did you get your resplendent attire from, sir?
You're asking a pirate how he acquired his belongings.
I think
you know the answer to that. Let's just say that the men who owned them first didn't need them anymore when I took them.
Oh, very good.
So, are you a regular Captain Burwash, or are there other Captain Burwashes around?
No other Burwashes, no. Yeah, I wouldn't call myself famous like Blackbeard or Hornigold or Rackham. But if I catch a prize big enough, I might be famous one day.
And at the Great Yorkshire Show, have you been here before?
Nay. Never this far inland, I must admit.
Heck of a treat for global warming if we are actually sort of dealing with parking various things up there. Sue?
So what things are you hoping to achieve today then, Captain Burwash?
Well, I shall just carouse and have a pleasant time of it. I mean, pirate can't expect a long life. It's a short one, but if you can make it merry, all the better.
Very good.
And I think, Captain Burwash, you need to actually say in your immortal words, this is Captain Burwash the Pirate, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM. A one, a two, a three.
This is Captain Burwash the Pirate, and you're listening to...
the Midweek Drive on Siren FM.
You said it for me. Marvellous.
So Dylan and Bridget have been left to continue with the colouring in, I believe, with the pirates.
Yes, Bridget was very much enjoyed it, so she's stayed for a little
That's
while.
Fine. I thought she was 46, but still. There we are. Sue, of course, is back with us, and we're now speaking to the delightful...
Gemma Foley.
Share with us, what have you brought here? Because we see the sign which actually says the felt making and nature bunting.
I'm Wild with Education, so I run environmental sustainable craft activities, and today at the Yorkshire Show I'm doing felt making and nature bunting mainly, and a few demos.
Yeah, so what does the felt making involve?
Doing wet felt, which is made from woolen top, so this is merino wool and it's all bright colours, lots of nice colours, and you build it up with thin layers. And you get it wet and add soapy water and a bit of friction, and there you go, and you've got your own textile, so people can make a picture or a bracelet or
this,
a bit of 3D.
This sounds as though it's, ideal occupational therapy in every sense of the word.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I've just got some wool in my hand at the moment. I take it this is the initial starting wool, and then you go on to make the felt. It's beautifully soft. Lots of long strands. So what's the trick to making really good felt?
A lot of rubbing. It is the friction part of it, just giving yourself time. And some people like to use a needle just to make it nice and tight, but haven't bought that today. But.
So how did you get involved with the whole process yourself? Is it something which kind of runs through the family, or is it an interest, or is it a hobby?
Yeah, just an interest. I love lots of different crafts. I do willow weaving and pottery and things as well. But I remember years ago I went to a free workshop at a festival. It was on donation and it was all I could afford, and then from that, and then I got some funding to get the wool, and then that was quite a few years ago now, and just carried on from there.
I've often said the Great Yorkshire Show is like a festival. It's like Glastonbury without the mud, in most cases. That's very true. And it is, it's a festival of agriculture, a festival of farming. What do you get a chance to actually look around the festival yourself here?
No.
Outrageous.
I have done. I've been here for a few years now. So when I shared the space with someone else, I had a little bit of a break to wander around, or in the morning before it starts. Yeah. But it's just me doing this. I sort of have to be here all day, really.
Well, you're just a slave to the rhythm. Sue.
What can you use the felt for, apart from the obvious of making models and things like that? What?
So traditionally in Mongolia they use it to line the yurts to keep them warm, and it's waterproof as well, but people use it to make shoes and hats and puppets and yeah, everything really. It's amazing.
Is it a craft that's had a bit of a resurgence, because there's certain crafts like knitting and things that have had a real boost over the recent years? Is it something that's really coming up?
Yeah, I think so, and people are bringing a lot of different textiles into it as well, or get people access in different ways of using it. So yeah,
I'm hesitant to actually ask, given obviously the nature of the craft and so on, and the low tech aspects of the whole thing, but do you have an internet site?
I don't know.
Yeah, there we are, you see. Success, we finally found one.
Word of mouth, it's all word of mouth, which is probably one of the quickest ways to get
I should get on it though and sort that out.
So where can people find you? Where's your next display of felt making going to be happening?
I'm not sure actually. I might be doing something at a festival in September, but it's not confirmed.
Do you want to give a name of the festival?
It might be Alchemy, but I'm not sure yet. So.
Alchemy's gain would be the rest of the world's gain as well, really. Once again, many thanks indeed. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
We always say it's a fair exchange when you actually have offers at shows like The Great Yorkshire. We've got two wonderful folk here whose names are
Lucy
and
Annabelle.
Lucy and Annabelle, you're currently have GC Motors yes. emblazoned upon your person. So share with us, what's Sue signing up to at this stage?
So basically, she can win a free iPad if she enters her email address, first name and last name, and then anyone can go to the stand, like us on Facebook, just putting the brand out there. Enough.
A free iPad, Sue?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. And not a free car. So how has the take-up been so far?
It's been really good so far, yeah. Everyone's been taking to it really well.
And have you guys been regulars at the Great Yorkshire Show, or is this first time around? You're nodding, obviously.
Yeah, I'm a member, so I've been every year since I was really, really young.
So you know everything from Judy Thompson, Nigel Pulling, the whole range of folk there. You know, it's a serious one. And Annabelle?
Yeah, I've been quite a few times as well, because I live close by, so...
How did you get roped in by GC Motors to effectively sort of do this scenario?
They asked my mum, actually, because they know my mum quite well, and she has a modelling agency, and she just asked for us.
You can give your mum's modelling agency a name check if you wish.
Oh, it's Face Value Management by Jane Wynn.
Face Value Management, you should get extra. Sue, any final questions?
Yes, the shoes, ladies, absolutely beautiful. When I got dressed at 4:30 this morning, I thought to myself, I'm going to have to walk a very long way. Maybe flat's the way to go. How are you going to walk in these beautiful shoes that are sort of 2-inch platform and about 4-inch heel?
I've got a lot of painkillers, to be honest with you.
We'll get through.
Excellent. We'll take a quick photograph for the moment. Many thanks indeed.
Amazing, the sort of joys that happened on day one of the Great Yorkshire Show. Day two, of course, yesterday. We'll find some more about that later. And, of course, day three today. But we could not leave our ace culinary correspondent in the hotel room any longer, particularly with the Greek crisis and all sorts of other bits and pieces. To whom are we referring to, of course? Well,
you're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
And presumably not wearing high heels this morning, William.
No. Not normally wearing high heels. In my flip-flops, as usual.
It's very good. Lovely quote from one of the tomato growers at the Great Yorkshire this week. Fridges do flavours, no favours. That's become a little pet phrase for us, really.
I completely agree. I mean, I wouldn't put my eggs in the fridge. Never put tomatoes in the fridge.
Indeed.
What was that noise?
It was an irate fridge person, basically saying boom, boom, boom away, etc. No, don't worry.
I wouldn't say that fridges are overrated. I wouldn't say something quite so stupid, but I think you can put too many things in them. Mm. And the things I think some people don't understand, there are things you should put in them that people don't think you should put in them. So, for example, you should put some red wines in the fridge, and you should take some white wines out of the fridge. There are some reds that taste a little better when they're slightly chilled, and there are some whites that taste better when they're not so chilled. So, and tomatoes, certainly. And the other thing is cheese. You know, take your cheese out of the fridge way before you're going to eat it. And of course, when you're going to chop up some fish, you'll make some sashimi. That doesn't want to come out straight out of the fridge cold. So there's lots of Yeah, there's some good advice there.
You see, I agree. Is one of the reasons why, clearly, that's a perfect rejoinder to Neil's Yard. Of course, people that we were connecting, they were out of Covent Garden and they were up at Harrogate for the Great Yorkshire, of course. And clearly, you know, presumably you've visited Neil's Yard before, William. I'd be surprised if you haven't.
Yeah, I've been to their cheese room.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there we are. Thumbs good. Eva McDonald's in the studio. Katie Grimerson has said, can you mention her to Mr. Sitwell? I just have.
Have you? Okay. Hi, Katie.
Exactly. Marvellous.
She's still begging.
Well, she's in the oldest part of Birmingham, the jewellery quarter, I believe. And she said she's in work already, obviously listening to the Midweek Drive, Morning Edition. Well done. Ready to get some SEO done.
And then she goes out and sells the big issue, what, lunchtime?
Shit. Bless her. William, what can I say? We'll talk about Greece, because clearly that takes us from one possible impecunious soul to another possible impecunious country. And eating habits, something you sort of said in our sort of pre-show chat whilst we were waiting to access you through the various hotel switchboards. Were you getting through here? It was. We were sort of through there. And we were always thinking about, well, what about the Greek financial crisis? Is it going to affect the notion of Greek cuisine?
Well, I think there's one thing that I have heard, in that because the Greeks are worried about all sorts of things, that they're holding on to their olives.
And, sorry, because, always makes me smile. That particular.
You are pathetic. Mm-hmm. They're keeping their olives close, and whether they're putting them in the fridge, I don't know, because it's important that they can keep hold of something. And I think we might find that, it could lead to an olive oil shortage. But what I would say is that, I mean, I don't know, I've always loved Greek food. I'm a bit of a Greekophile. The merest sip of a glass of retsina and I can feel my toes dangling in the green.
Like ambrosia, perhaps.
Of the warm Aegean Sea. Mm-hmm. And I think that people shouldn't be put off going to Greece at this point. Tourism is one of its biggest industries, as well as shipping and olive oil, I suppose. And feta cheese, although I think there's more feta cheese that comes out of Japan probably than Greece these days, or Norway. But I think we should definitely go on holiday there, buy retsina, eat the calamari, eat some daramo salada, and support the Greeks. Just take a stash of cash, because they need us now more than ever. And, we should raise a glass of retsina and wish them well. But I've been thinking a lot about France this week, of course, because it was Bastille Day on Tuesday.
Indeed.
14 juillet, 14th of July, celebrating the beginning of, was it the French Revolution? And you probably know the dates off the top of your head.
Ooh, back in the day, back in the 70s. Exactly. I mean, the French have been revolutionising for lots of years, really, in many ways. Yeah. I mean, it's not quite as resonant as 1776, of course. But indirectly, it was responsible for, again, the loss of the colonies.
Yeah, so I was asking my my listener on Soho Radio, on my show on Tuesday, two listeners I think we have now, what their favourite French dishes were. And people were championing foie gras, which seems to upset some people, understandably. Another was for talking snails and tartiflette, and it is a wonderful, I mean, just to think about France, it's just wonderful, the food you can get from there. I think it's easier to sum up French national cuisine than it is British cuisine, because we're such a pool of talent and migration. But I think one of the problems France has is that actually it's struggling to keep hold of its culinary identity in the wake of, international consumerism. I mean, I think we may have chatted before on this show about this, but I think there's more people in the bigger revenues for McDonald's in France than anywhere on the planet outside of the United States. So,
technically,
so I think when it is Bastille Day, we need to big up the French.
Le McDonald's, in the case of the French.
So. Le McDonald's.
Exactly. As we had earlier with Les Garçons de la Plage, as in the French Beach Boys. I always like to keep that franglais going. Miles Kington, he's on to something there. I think he could have franglais for the world. It's a different line.
I'm glad you mentioned Miles Kington. He was a great scribbling hero of mine when I was small. I thought he was a wonderful writer.
We'd be connect over the whole system. Eva, any thoughts on either French cuisine or indeed the Greek crisis?
French cuisine, you've got a lot of nice food, haven't you, with French cuisine? I mean, I haven't tried very much myself, but it's sort of a mix, isn't it? You get the, I mean, you get the snails and you get...
L'escargot.
Yes, l'escargot.
Le grand oui.
Touch up on my French because I don't know that much. But I'll have to give it a try sometime.
There we are, you see.
Go to the bottom of your garden, find some snails, and then braise them very slowly. You need to boil them for a long time to soften them. And you also need to sort of purify them, get all the nasty bits out of them, and then you can fry them in garlic. I was with Marco Pierre White once, and a man came in called, he was called the Snail Man, Mr. Snail, who was a snail supplier. So there, you know, I bet you didn't know there was a snail man out there. British snail man. So there are British snail producers.
And they say that we don't have British superheroes. Nonsense. Snail man is on the case. A little bit slower, but nevertheless reliable.
Always.
And on that bombshell, William Sitwell, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I think that accurately describes it.
That's right. So are you up with us again next week?
Why not?
Splendid, as I say, we're once. We've got the National Portrait Gallery probably on Friday. It's just tomorrow, and then after that, we have a little momentary ease before we actually set ourselves up, of course, for the Northampton Food Festival, which will be occurring very soon.
You're going to the National Portrait Gallery, are you?
We are indeed.
Yes. Well, go and look for my forebears. Go and look for the very shining gold looking bust of my uncle Osbert Sitwell. And see if you can find Edith Sitwell. Go and look for those guys.
Osbert and Edith Sitwell.
Go and look about them, and I shall quiz you next week on their literary output.
We will be on the case. And would you like Pompeii and Bastille as a little track to soothe you through for reasons which the discerning listener might have sussed if they were paying attention? Although I gather the attention span, according to Microsoft, of the average human being these days, William, is 8 seconds. So, lots of time for repeat opportunities there. But there we are.
Sorry, what was that?
There you go.